And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday. January the 2nd, 2026. Hey, got the year right. First Friday in the year 2026. First Friday in the month of January. 12 minutes past the hour. And as we do each and every Friday, we visit with our friend, Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship on WGH Talk Radio. Pastor Whitaker, how are you?
I am wonderful, Scott. I just got over, you can probably tell in my voice, a little tail end of it, just getting over one of those terrible colds that's been going around.
You know, it seems like everybody's had one. It has been something.
Well, you know, I went to a wrestling meet I went to a wrestling meet at Osiris this last week, and or the first of the week. And I looked at that place, and I mean, there were 17 teams there. So you can imagine the amount of parents. And I bet about 10% of the people there or more were sick. And I looked at my wife, and I said, you know what? 100% of the people that are here are going to be sick in the next 4 days.
Well, you know, it's one of the great things about the holidays is that we get together. But unfortunately, when there's a bug going around or a flu or a cough, when we get in these enclosed areas, that can happen.
It can. Hey, I want to tell you, Scott. I'm. You've got me on mobile, and I'm going to be going through a spot in just a minute that may get a little weak, but it'll pop right back out.
Sounds good.
You know how that happens.
I do.
Anyway, did you have a good Christmas?
I did. Christmas was great. It was actually a very relaxed Christmas this year. The only thing untypical about it was the weather, but people seemed to like that it was 57, 60 degrees on Christmas Day, so that's good.
Yeah, really. It was nice not to, you know, the cold kind of gets to you after a while, but especially if you've got livestock and you're out trying to keep water from being frozen and those type of things, but you know, we really had a wonderful Christmas. I was so excited with the attendance at the church the week prior and then on Christmas Eve and then the week following. And it was so wonderful. You know, a week before our giveaway, which I think was on whatever that Saturday was in December when we have our annual Christmas blessing and we help families shop for presents out there at the church. We were looking and thinking, you know, we were lifting all this up in prayer because we just thought, wow, we got a lot of people calling this year, and we don't have a lot. Well, it worked out, Scott, that we ended up probably about 85 kids. I don't have the exact number in front of me. About 85 kids were able to have Christmas and have gifts. And then the nice thing was that people were so appreciative. And, you know, it's not something we pat ourselves on the back for because God provided the money, people, and the donations, and basically all we did was facilitate the thing, you know. And it's just a blessing to see those people help. And the need is really great this year.
Why do you think the need was greater this year than maybe in past years?
You know, I don't know. I gotta be honest with you. I think that for one, the people seemed a lot more appreciative this year. It was really kind of odd. I mean, not that they're not anyway, but what I mean is there was a very humble spirit. I know that you know, there's been a lot of people. I think it goes in cycles with us, to be honest. I'll give you an example. A lot of times, like last year, almost everybody that came seemed to have teenagers. And this year, there was a different group of kids that all seemed to be. Some of these families have 5 and 6 kids. And then what will happen is they get divorced and they end up with someone else. Or you know, if they've got 7 or 8 kids under us. And so I think that adds to it. I think another thing was we were really very flexible in reaching out beyond our school district. Normally we just do our school district because that's all we can maintain. But this year we reached across the border a little bit into Richwood and different places. So I think that might have been part of it.
What do you think was people's big hope or wish for the new year during this past Christmas season?
Wow. I think most people's wish was not financial. I think most people's wish was family, and which is a good thing. A lot of people seem more concerned about family. You know, I talked to a lady that came and was helped, and it was a really amazing story. She, she had gotten into drugs, and she had been sent to jail. And her kids had gone to foster homes. And this lady got out, and now I think her kids went to her parents, not foster homes. But anyway, this lady has been totally clean for 2 years and the best mom in the world. She looks fantastic, and she's excited for life. She's excited for her kids. Her kids are doing so much better. And those are the kind of good stories you want to hear. And I think that a lot of people, family is just something very, very important to them. And I don't know. There's something out there that is different that I've seen in a while. I think people are deciding that a lot of this stuff, they need to slow down. They need to be more familial and care about people. You know, it seems like every year this time of year we lose people as far as passing away. And I don't know why at Christmas time that you do, but it seems to be that every year. Maybe we pay more attention to it. But I know that this year several families close to us have lost their children. Their parents. And there just seems to be, even in those situations, there seems to be a calm in a just the gathering together of families is so much more important. You know, when I'm called to do a funeral, I do the funeral. It doesn't matter who it is. I just go and do. To me, it's part of a real ministry, Scott, to be honest with you. And it's great to be able to help those families. But there just seems to be a little, dare I say, warmer vibe out there.
You know what was strange to me was maybe Christmas Eve. Now, this might be because of the weather, but I was here at the studio on Christmas Eve, and we did our Christmas Eve programming that we normally do, which we've done every year for 12 years, and had my Christmas Eve gathering that night, which I'd done forever at this point. But what was strange, and I don't know if this was the weather or the year or what it was, but people were out, and they were frantic. And people, I went into a store, and a manager actually used the term frantic. And one of our guests that morning on the Christmas Eve program actually said, getting to the studio, people were frantic out on the roads. And, you know, I kind of noticed that myself. It took me to get off the boulevard to get to Meijer on Route 95 Christmas Eve morning at probably 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It took me 20 minutes. And I don't know what that was. I don't know if because the weather was nice. It was different.
Huh, that's interesting. I there were a lot of people out. I know that Frank Robinson that comes in with me sometimes, Frank donates his time to the Salvation Army every year. And he was spending a lot of time ringing a bell. You know, they do pay people to do that, but Frank always does that out of the goodness of his heart. And matter of fact, he travels all the way down to, you ever hear of Woodstock, Ohio?
I have.
He travels to Woodstock, Ohio to visit people in a nursing home that they can't get anyone to come and be there for them. And so there's that warm spirit out there. I was going into Kroger, a few days before Christmas, and there was a lady there, and she was an older lady, and she was, it was that day that it was just so frigid cold, right before it warmed up. And she was sitting in there in the entryway, and that entryway was as cold as outside. And I asked her if she was okay, and she looked like she was going to freeze to death. But, you know, she was still doing it. And you know, that takes something to still care about people and helping people at that point. I did see a lot of outreach this year, and it's a true blessing. But you know what? There's something I did a little bit different this year, Scott. Every year as people come in to the Christmas blessing to shop, Shirley schedules them three people every half hour because we have people that help them shop. We call them our elves. And it gives it breaks it up and makes it happen a lot easier that way. And we start that at like 9 o'clock in the morning and run it through 1 in the afternoon. And anyway, when the people came in, I usually sit and talk to them and ask them about how things have been and how financially they're hanging, all those kind of things. But I did something completely different this year. And, you know, God laid it on my heart to ask these families about their children and to talk about the importance of children and the importance of taking care of children. And I told all of them, I said, I know that most of you have something in your childhood that you carry with you, whether it was some form of abuse, maybe it was someone that mom or dad brought in the house that they shouldn't have. Maybe a way you were treated. Maybe you were just poor and you were constantly moving from house to house. But I said, you know, most of you have something that has been a real trauma in your childhood, and I know that. And I said, you know what? I said, what I want you to think about is, you know how that made you feel and what you still carry. And do you want your child to feel that and know that? And what can we do so that your children don't have to go through those same things you've gone through and how important it is? And I talked to them about, you know, finding a local church to go to, get the kids involved in stuff where people care about them and like them. You know, one of the things that I don't think people realize is that in most churches, certainly in neighborhood churches and definitely, most definitely in our church, you know, when people come to church and they become part of the body and they're there, if they have a need, I mean, we know it. If whatever it is, I mean, the church comes together and helps support them as we always should, and that's the way it was meant to be. And, you know, unfortunately, what's happened with this whole new modern church movement and everyone running to go to a great big, you know what I mean, there's not that personal touch there. And but there's still those small local churches they can go to. Just seek one out, one that's going to be there for you. And, you know, I think a lot of times, too, when you talk about people that have needs and people that, for lack of a better term, are poor or disadvantaged, they feel like everyone's looking at them when they go to one of these big churches. It's real beautiful, and you walk in, and everything's so nice, and everyone's dressed so nice, and the music's just perfect, and they really feel like they're being judged, even if they're not. And I think that when you get into the smaller local churches where, like our church, man, people come from all walks of life. And I know when people come into our church, they don't get that. When we have events and do things and people go out and do things, you know, income and social status just doesn't even play into it. And I think that you get that with a lot of the really larger, new, modern churches. And they're not going to get that. They shouldn't get that. So I encourage them to find a place near them. I mean, I didn't ask them to come to Prospect, to our church. I said, find a place near you. Now, one thing I would like is if they'd like to bring their kids to Team Kids for Christ twice a month, that's a great kids program and outreach. And of course, we've got Trail Life for boys. You know, if you can find a ride there, that would be great, or hook up with somebody that's coming that way. But, you know, they need to find a place they can call a home. And the church will do that. And there are some churches out there that are not going to judge them for who they are. I think that one of those churches that comes to mind there in Marion would probably be Shepherd's Fellowship is one of those churches. I know that Tom's family of people there would welcome people right in, and we certainly do. And you know, there's other places they could go to, but you see what I'm saying about trying to get your life kind of in a more organized and positive direction.
Well, I do, and I think most people hope that can happen and pray that can happen, but it's difficult for a lot of people, honestly. I mean, we all hope that everybody gets there, but organization is a very difficult people, especially when it comes to time management.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I am the worst organizer in the world. When I left high school, you know, as far as the little things, everyone writes in your yearbook. Well, I was the greatest procrastinator. And so organization's always been a struggle of mine, but I make it work. And I think when you set a firm priority, you can you can do that. It depends on what you want, you know, what you truly want. And I think if somebody truly desires to go to church and God knows they want to change in their life, He'll prepare a way for them to do that. I really do believe that. But they've got to believe it, and they've got to want it. But it's got to be, they've got to realize that you can't, you know, people do care about them. I just left a guy that is getting ready to go back into rehab for alcohol. And he's been battling severe alcoholism now he's been a severe alcoholic for probably 30 years. But he's only been battling it, I would guess, the last 10. And he goes in rehab and out of rehab, and in rehab and out of rehab. And I went and I hugged him and I prayed with him and asked the Lord to give him peace through it. You know, you got to love people. This guy doesn't want to be an alcoholic, you know. But it's very hard sometimes for people to shake those things that have molded them for so long. But you don't stop loving them. You don't stop caring about them. You don't stop letting them know that, you know what, you're a person too, just like me. You know, you're not worthless. And many places will make them feel that way. And that's just a bad thing.
You know, there's so many things going on in people's lives that people are not aware of. I think that's one of the biggest things to come out of come into this new year that I hope people pay attention to, is that sometimes you have to ask people what's going on with them, because you think they're okay and you think they're doing okay, or maybe you think they're just having an off day, but there actually is something causing that. And I don't know that we inquire as much as we used to about that.
You know, one of the things that I ask, excuse me, all of my students to do that are in the church, and I bring this up, you know, I have a great talk. I do a piece with a pastor twice a month, and all these kids come in. I get kids from all over the place. I got them from Marion. I've got them from Big Walnut, Buck Alley, Elgin, North Union. But they come and we have a great time. We talk about these issues. And I always encourage them that, you know, there's always that kid in the hallway, puts their head down and won't talk to anyone. Or that kid that comes in and maybe that day he's really being rude. Or maybe, excuse me, Scott. Maybe he's a bully. I ask him, do you realize that you don't know what they just left at home? You know, while you may have gotten up this morning and got your breakfast and put clean clothes on and everything was nice and fresh and mom said have a great day and gave you a hug or whatever, and you know, you may have a kid that barely was able to was hungry when he got up, hungry when he came to school, couldn't wait to get there and get that morning snack they offer. Maybe his clothes hadn't been washed, he's worried about how he smells. Maybe he got slapped around a little bit before he left that day. Or he listened to someone fighting and cussing and yelling all night long. See, that's just the thing. We don't know what people go through. So you really need to reach out and be kind to everyone. Because we just don't know. And being kind to people, you may save somebody by by speaking to someone or saying, how you doing, or good to see you today, or just start a conversation. How's this going? Hey, I heard you're having trouble with your in science class. Can I help you with something on a free period, you know? And just by doing that stuff, you may save a young person from a world of drugs or from even suicide that day.
Yeah, you never know what impact you can make by just inquiring a little bit about what's going on in somebody's life. And I think there's more pressure today on younger people, mainly because of the internet. You know, what used to be a rumor around a school that maybe would get to 300 people be whispering in between classes or passing notes, instantaneously now can go to thousands of people with the click of a button on your phone.
That's true, but I'll say this too, that a lot of those kids that are living in the fringes and on the fringes, they're not even on these kids that have normal lives. They're not even on their social pages. They haven't even been friended, and which is probably in some cases a good thing. My dad was killed in an auto accident when I had just turned 13. I was 13 for about a month, and my mom had never worked outside of the home, and we were quite poor for a while. I never felt poor, you know. I was always taught that I was as good as everyone else and could do anything I wanted to. I praise God my parents had that attitude and instilled that in me at a very young age. But, you know, I would go to things and all the kids would be, you know, their parents were giving money to go out to eat after a ball game or whatever the case may be. I never had that. But what I did have to do, I had to go get a job. I got a job at a local Ohio station. And then in the summertime, I ended up working at a precast concrete place. But the point is, you know, I know what it feels like to be on the outside looking in. I'll never forget one time I was working at the gas station, and I couldn't be at something that was going on that evening. And this girl's parents came in. And they brought me an ice cream cone. They were on their way home from it. And they were being very kind to me. But, you know, that really kind of made me feel like, I don't know, kind of like I was a charity case. And it hurt me a little. Maybe it shouldn't have. But I don't know. You know, maybe if they would have stopped and said, hey, Steve, we're buying ice cream. Maybe her dad would said, I'm buying ice cream for everybody. You want to go? Or you want to bring it back a cone? That might have been okay. But you got to realize, too, that we have to be sensitive to how people feel that maybe are in a bad way. You know, don't walk up to them in a church and hand them an envelope with $100 in it and say, hey, so-and-so took up a collection for you. You know, I know that in our church, when people have a need, typically what happens is someone will come up to me and they'll say, hey, here's $200. Give this to this person and don't let them know where it came from. And I'll just, you know, being the fact that I've probably already talked to these people and know their situation, I'll walk up and say, here, I want you to have this. And it doesn't matter who it's from. I just want you to know that you're loved. And you know, and another thing to remind people is, you know, say, you know what, when you get on your feet someday, turn around and help somebody else. And then they feel like they're part of it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, absolutely. And I think, in a way, that's another thing that is very difficult for people. The most difficult thing for people to give, and I'm not sure that it always has been this way, but it certainly is today, is their time. You know, it's very hard for people to give their time because everybody's involved, it seems, in everything now.
Oh, absolutely.
And I kind of feel, in a way, if people can't give a little bit of time, that, you know, it's kind of hard to forge a friendship or any type of relationship because you have to see or actually hear their voice every so often.
And that's it. You know what, though, Scott? I'll be honest with you. It's not as hard as you think, and you don't have to spend as much time as you think. I'll give you an example. You take a person and say they need that. They really need that. And they need a friend. And you just drop the line, how you doing, buddy? I've got a guy that lives close to me, and every other day, at the least, mostly every day, he'll pop me a text that says, hey, buddy, how's it going? And I just text him back, that's going good, I've got a cold. He says, oh, bummer, man, I hope you get better, I'll pray for you or something. And you know, that's it. But you know what, and we stay closely connected. Then I see him in midweek Bible study, and we connect there and talk, and I'll see him on Sunday. And other than that, I mean, he's got a friend in me. And but that didn't take me a tremendous amount of time, and it really doesn't. There's some elderly people that I'll connect with, and they know they're going to hear from me. It just doesn't take the time that we really think it does. Everyone's always afraid that if you make friends with these people, they're going to drain you. Now, I did have a young man a while back that I was counseling, and I was doing it every week, and it was taking an hour, and he literally was just taking up time. He was not doing anything that I asked him to do. He wasn't changing anything. He wasn't even attempting to change anything, and he didn't want to change anything. The guy's 25, 26 years old now, and he sits in upstairs in his bedroom and doesn't work and lives off nothing and refuses to go out and even look for a job. Well, I finally told the guy, I said, look, when you're really ready to listen to what I counsel you with and to have help and start moving forward and take some suggestions, I will counsel you. But again, until then, there's no point. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I had given a lot of time, and he may have made no progress because he chose not to. And sometimes you have to know when to fish, and sometimes you got to know when to cut bait.
Well, that's true, and I think some people don't understand that. You know, I was having a conversation. This is this was interesting to me because some people only see you with them. They don't see you with other people. And the conversation was, you know, you ask a lot of questions. But I ask a lot of questions of everybody. That's just my personality. But this person felt that I was just doing it with them. And once I said, well, no, I mean, this is how I kind of treat everybody, it was okay. But when they thought I was singling them out and trying to analyze their life, they felt, I don't want to say bothered, but they just felt that was a different thing to do. But once they knew that I did it with other people, they were fine with it.
Yeah, this particular guy, I think that he knew how I talked to other people. I mean, he sat in church a lot and listened to my messages, which, I'll be honest with you, counseling was just one-on-one from what I do in the pulpit, for the most part. And I know that it just, some people want to, they feel like talking to somebody is solving their problem. That's not why you talk to someone. You talk to someone so that they can direct you in a way to solve your problem. Counseling is not solving the problem. It's what you do with the counseling that solves the problem. I tell couples when they come to me and they're having marriage trouble and they're really at the point sometimes where they just despise each other, you know, or don't even want to look at each other. And I always ask them the first thing I ask them is this. I tell them to shut their eyes and go back to when they first met. And go back to what it was that drew them to each other. And then from that point, what it was that made those feelings get stronger and finally get to the point of marriage. And they sit there and they think a minute, and then when they open their eyes, I tell them, hey, look, I said, do you know that you can recreate that? You can go back to that? You got to be willing to let go of all the hurts in between and say, you know, when you got married, there was a commitment to each other because you loved each other. You wanted to be together. And I said, that commitment hasn't changed. You just left it. And it's one of those things, I can show them in their mind what they need to do or what they need to be. But if they don't take that advice, if they don't decide to put, you know, the whole thing about keeping a marriage together is always putting the other person first. You think, well, what about me? Well, the point is, if I'm putting you first and you're putting me first, both of our needs are being met. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
because they're caring about you and what your needs are, and they're trying to meet those needs. And then you're caring about them and meeting their needs. So everybody wins. It's a win-win. And either you've got one person in the relationship doing all the caring and the other person not, or you've got both of them wanting their own way. And what they don't realize is they'll get their own way, in a way, if they just put the other person first. And they don't do that. You know, we live in a me-first society. You know, if you look at everything, the promotions out there, you know, you can do it, just do it, you know, those kind of things. I was very disappointed in a new podcast that was out there. And it was being, I think it's it's a podcast, being done by the girl that played Kelly on 90210. And the podcast is about, it's all about me, loving me, me first, me first, me first, me first. And self-love and self-love. You know, self-love is horribly destructive. I think that you have to, I think you have to care about yourself. And care about what you're doing with yourself. But, you know, the Bible teaches us to love others before ourselves. And I do think that the true joy and the true peace comes from when you're reaching out to help people, not just helping yourself. Because that can become a very lonely world. When I meet people at the end of their life, and they've been someone that has always cared about self first, they're usually a very, very lonely person, and they die that way. When you care about other people and love other people, oh my word, I had a pastor friend years ago that passed away. Just a simple little church. You'd have thought maybe there'd be 50, 60 people maybe at the outside coming to his visitation time and his funeral. And when I walked up to come in, there was a line out the door and down the street, and it was because he put others before himself.
You know, that's interesting. There are two points there that I want to pick up on because I think they're interesting. One of them is that people cannot heal somebody else. I think it was a few weeks before Christmas. I was having a conversation with somebody who I've known for quite a while. And recently, they said something, and I thought, ah, that's the final piece of the puzzle for me. Because I had always wondered, the person that I knew did not quite line up with the decisions that they make in life or had made in their life. Now, I'm not judging. It just, the person that I was around didn't seem like the person who was making those decisions. And I could never quite figure out why that was. The personality didn't match the actions. And they said something, and in my mind, in that moment, I thought, that's it. That's the piece that I have been missing that makes these two separate issues line up. But they wanted to know what that was, and I said, well, I can't tell you. If you think there's an issue, you have to figure it out. You know, I figured it out for me, but that's not necessarily going to be your answer. You have to do the work yourself if you think there is a problem, and if you don't think there's a problem, don't worry about it. So that was interesting. And the other thing you said about funerals is fascinating. I have always said, you know, God forbid it's 100 years from now, but I do not like the idea of a visitation or a funeral, because people have become much more apparent of people who show up at a funeral. And I don't know, for some reason that gives me a little, I don't know, that's not to me what I think about when I go to someone's funeral.
What, how many people show up?
Yeah, how many people show up? But so many people talk about that.
Well, I think it's because, you know, first of all, if it's your relative, family member, friend, loved one, it really makes you feel good if people show up because they know they cared about that person and that person meant something to them. And my point in what I said was that when you have somebody like this fellow that I knew, who was a nobody in life, to be honest with you, there's no great things you could point out that he did. but he cared about and loved and helped so many people that there literally was several hundred people at his funeral. And my point is, when you care about nobody but yourself, and you don't build those bonds, those relationships, and I wasn't necessarily talking who showed up at their funeral. I was talking about the fact that they're very lonely at the end of life, and that person that is very caring is not lonely at the end of life. So when I was mentioning, you know, people that come and people that don't come, I mean, when someone really gets old and most of the people they knew are gone, if they could be a wonderful person, you're not going to get a huge attendance.
That's it. That's what, and I think that's what happens. Because most of the funerals, you know, that I go to are people who are older, because that's the majority of people.
And you're not going to get. Right. You're not going to get it. Most of the relatives are gone.
Right.
And they never made a real connection with younger people because they've gotten so old, and so it's not fair to judge. If I was not. Excuse me if it sounded like I was judging people by how many came to their funeral. What I was saying was, in the case of this fellow, he was so loved by everyone that it was a surprise to me to come there and find people down the street waiting to get in to see the family.
Right.
And that's what happens when you reach out and care about people. There's other reasons it can happen too.
Right, and
I've seen people go to funerals because it was a status symbol. Some important person passes, and they use the school gymnasium for their funeral because everyone's got to say they went. I mean, that's just crazy to me.
Well, and that's...
That happens.
Well, and that's kind of what I was thinking. I mean, no, I think it's great when people show up at the funeral and that it makes the family feel better. That's wonderful. And people should have that, and no judgment on that. What is... a little unsettling to me that I see, and it's definitely the minority, is, I mean, if you live into your 90s, which is, that's you beat the rate. I mean, you know, the life expectancy, I think, right now is somewhere around 75. If you live into your 90s, chances are you've outlived your spouse. Chances are you've outlived your friends. Chances are you...
Sometimes a couple of your kids.
It's sometimes a couple of your kids are in their 70s. So, and chances are you're not working anymore, so you don't have... You know, your coworkers are not as close as they once were.
Yeah, I get that, Scott. You cannot judge somebody's personality, self-worth, and who they were by that at all. I think that, you know, like I said, the point I was making was that this guy was so well loved that everybody wanted to pay their respects.
Right, but have you?
He was not popular. He had no money. It's not like people. It wasn't a status thing. People coming. People were coming like, oh no, he's gone. I've got to go to that. He was such a wonderful person.
Right, but have you noticed? And again, this is aside from that point, because I think that's absolutely a great thing, and a lot of people have that, thank goodness. But have you ever noticed if somebody dies in a tragedy, people will show up that didn't even know that person?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
It's weird. It's weird. And I see that sometimes, and I think, geez, that's very odd to me. I don't quite understand that.
I think sometimes they feel so bad for the family that they say, you know what, we need to go. I think sometimes they want the family to know. I hope that's the reason. I hope it's just not because, wow, they want to be part of the whatever's going on. I mean, it's just like we've talked about this before, how we've talked about why there's so much bad news. And, you know, you've talked on the show, and we've talked about this, that, hey, that's what gets the ratings. And the shootings and the this and the that and the bad stuff get the ratings. Well, unfortunately, sometimes tragedies get the ratings, so to speak. And people want to cling on to that tragedy. It's bizarre human behavior to me.
It is. And, you know, last year we had the deputy, Shearer, who was killed horribly over in Morrow County, and the turnout was tremendous. I mean, people lined the streets. But also, you know, they advertised where the funeral route was going to be, and it was, you know, not winter and that sort of thing. So I'm never quite sure how to take that as, you know, is that, it's great that you're showing up for the family and great that you're showing up for that person, but are you doing it because of the good reason? Are you doing that because you want to support them? Or are you doing that because it's a news story? And I never know.
Well, I'll tell you, the family knows the people that know them and truly care. And I think they can sense a lot when you're going through that line, that visiting line, that they sense some of that and that they can see that. I just always hope that I'm not getting lumped in with the other crowd when I'm there. The last thing I want to do is have somebody look at me and think, oh, he didn't even know him. What's he doing here? And I think a lot of that goes on. I am one that if I don't know you very well, I'm not going to your visitation or your funeral. There's no point. I may send a card of condolences if I kind of know them or there's a reason. But if there's not someone that I have a personal connection with, why would I go? I mean, that's a time for family and close people. And if people do that, I mean, I don't want to judge why they're doing it, but I don't get it.
No, and you know something that happened recently? I had a friend, well, a coworker, I should say, a coworker whose husband died. And it was decided that one person, because obviously not everybody can be off to go to the funeral, that one person would go, I think maybe two or three, it was a small amount, that group would go on behalf of the business to that funeral. And I think, because it's a tough time when you lose your husband, I think when that person came back to work, and I'm sure this will pass as time goes along, they were a little upset that the people they felt they were closer with at that job, their coworkers, didn't show up. But I'm not even sure they were aware that the conversation happened, that this was the group that was going to go because they were available.
Well, and maybe that should have been something that one of the person that represented that group, you know, might have said that, you know, so-and-so would love to be here, but because of scheduling that they asked us to come. Another thing they could have done is the company could have sent flowers, which they probably did,
mm-hmm.
and then on the card made sure that all those co-workers' names got to be signed on the card. That eases some of that burden. It sounds to me like it was kind of a corporate faux pas.
Yeah, and I think in that position that they did circulate a card, and everybody who signed it was able to sign it, and that went along to them, and I'm pretty sure their flowers were sent. But I think it was just that. Have you ever had that situation where somebody feels closer to you than maybe you feel to them, and you don't realize it until the situation is passed, and then when they come back to you, or you hear that they wonder why you weren't there, you feel bad because you think, well, if I'd known that was going to mean so much, I would have tried to make it.
Well, I'm a pastor, so you can imagine that happens frequently. Now, I do care about people. I care about everyone. But sometimes there are people that may feel like they're your buddy. And, yeah, that certainly can happen. Man, it's hard. I'm like you. I meet and see so many people. And, you know, people will come up to me and say, hey, Pastor, how's it been? And start talking to me. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's been great. Who are you? But I can't say that. You know what I mean.
Right, you know, I'll tell you, one of the saddest, it's probably the saddest thing I ever saw at a funeral, was I went to somebody's visitation one time, and that's all I had planned to do. It was not a close friend, it was just somebody I knew through work. And I went to their visitation, and at the visitation, because their family lived, I guess I just didn't see their family. I'm not sure where their family might have been local, but I didn't know the family. I knew the person. So I see the family at the visitation, and they say, will you speak at the funeral tomorrow? And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and I said yes, because I didn't want to say no, but I saw them go, it must have been that point at the visitation where they were trying to set this up. They went to the next person and said that, because I think they were trying to get three or four people who knew them personally to speak, other than the pastor, and that person said no, and I'll tell you, that was as awkward as a moment as you'd ever want to be around.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine. You know, the one thing that's awkward with me is sometimes I'll be asked to do a funeral for a family, and half of the family's at odds with the other half, and I know both sides very well, and I'm not going to say, no, I'm not doing the funeral. You know what I mean? I do want to do it because I know the person, and I've known them for years, but the other side of the family is like, you know, we're not even going to the thing, and why are you doing it? I thought you were our friend. No, I'm a pastor. When I'm asked to do a funeral, that's a ministry that I take up on. And, you know, then you got to go do local repair on your, I don't know, it can be tough. Hey, listen, buddy, I don't run.
Well, Pastor, good to talk with you. Hope you feel better.
What's your schedule next week? Same thing every day?
Yeah, I'm here every day, 8 to 10.
I'm going to buzz in one day. If you got a particular day that you might want to have somebody join in on you somewhere, let me know. Maybe I'll join in on you the same day I come in.
Hey, I'll do that. Sounds good, Pastor Whitaker. Thanks.
God bless, buddy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, Pastor Steve Whitaker, the pastor spot here on WGH Talk Radio. Got about 2 minutes left in the program today, and do want to remind everybody we do have another hour of programming coming up, 12:15 to 1 p.m. here on the station. And you can always listen to this station via the internet, WWGH1071.com, or download the free TuneIn app on any mobile device and search WGH Talk. With about 90 seconds to go, Bob, you've been doing the decorating here in the studio. How's it coming along? Are we done?
No, we're not done yet. But
you took a break there. I thought we were done.
Well, I didn't want to do any nail hammering during the interview there, although I did one incident there. But We're nearing the end here of this current round.
Well, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, what still needs to be done?
Well, I said when I come back, yeah, for Groundhog's Day, I'm going to fix that Phyllis Diller picture there. I'm going to get you the right frame.
So that's a pet.
And a frame that's not broken.
Yeah.
And so it will be rehung there. But for the most part, we're there.
We're there today.
Yeah, I need to do a little work on the things behind you, but there again, I did not want to disturb you during the last interview.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to get those during the break here.
That's my plan.
Yeah. Just don't bump anything, because
I think I might have been a little responsible for the last time.
Yeah,
there.
Even the slightest bump will take us off. This is the epicenter over here.
I will be far more careful.
Yes, it's a very touchy situation over here.
If I have to do anything that bumps anything, I'll blame it on Matt.
And any touching this wall is nothing but trouble. Nothing but trouble. It's just nothing but trouble.
What if I drill a hole into the?
No. No drilling. I think they were just hammering into this wall the last time when they knocked all our pictures off the wall and knocked the electric out. There's something about this wall. Well, I think it's where everything comes in this building comes through.
A number of the pictures have very poor hangings on the back of the picture to attach them to the wall.
Why they were there.
I've done my best to fix them a little bit, you know, but some of them are hung a little slightly crooked because I could not fix that. I did not have the.
So you thought this was on purpose. We'll be back in 15 minutes.
So the place was on purpose.
And I thought that was too mouthy. Margaret Bradley.